This podcast is in no way affiliated with the Stars production or Diana Gabaldone. All views expressed are solely our own. Welcome to the Outlander podcast,
where the men are kilted, the women are winsome,
and the whiskey is neat. Welcome to episode 246 of the Outlander podcast. I'm Ginger.
And I'm Summer, and we are in love with all things Outlander.
This episode is part of our Drums of Autumn read-along. To find out more and how to participate, visit outlanderpod.com/DOA.
And now, on to our read-along. This week, we will be discussing chapters 28 and 29, beginning with 28, entitled Heated Conversations.
Young Ian is now ill with the measles.
Do you think that's the reference to heated? It starts with heated because he's fevered?
There are a few. Yeah, and she gets to that. Leanne F. writes, measles, yuck. And she shares some pictures with us, which we'll give you the link. She shares information from, it's a CDC link, the symptoms of measles generally appear about 7 to 14 days after a person is infected. Measles typically begin with high fever, cough, runny nose, and red watery eyes. 2 to 3 days after symptoms begin, tiny white spots, cup-lick spots, may appear inside the mouth. 3 to 5 days after symptoms begin, a rash breaks out. It usually begins as flat red spots that appear on the face at the hairline and spread downward to the neck, trunk, arms, legs, and feet. Small raised bumps may also appear on top of the flat red spots. The spots may become joined together as they spread from the head to the rest of the body. When the rash appears, a person's fever may spike to more than 104 degrees Fahrenheit. After a few days, fever subsides and rash fades. Yummy.
That sounds delightful.
Claire moves Ian into the house. She puts him into the bed, into the trundle, and Lord John really wants to help. He's being a mensch. He's being a good guy, the good guy that he is. But the nurse in her wants to sass back. Quote, if you really wanted to be helpful, you'd walk to the privy rather than use the chamber pot, which I have to empty. Quote. But she doesn't say it. And truthfully, she knows he wasn't up to that yet. He's not well enough to be walking around outside. She sits with him, young Ian, and rubs his temples using acupressure. He remembers Willoughby, Yi Tian Cho, and his acupuncture. She fills in Lord John about Willoughby and how he actually wasn't the murderer they were looking for on Jamaica. And we learn from John that they never caught him. Lord John asks if Claire knows who did kill Mrs. Alcott. She says she does, and that's all it takes for young Ian to once again be dragged into a plot by keen interest. After assuring Lord John that it was neither Jamie nor young Ian, meaning who killed Mrs. Alcott, so the two sickies wait for their bedtime story. Cindy R. writes, poor Ian! You can imagine his absolute misery as the measles, fever, and headaches start to take hold. Despite that, he perks up when Claire starts to discuss the murder of Lady Alcott back on Jamaica. True Scotsman loves a story. True teenager loves blood and guts.
And gossip.
Yeah. I'm so excited to see John Bell bring Ian's nuances back to life in season 4. He was the perfect Ian, and I think we're going to be treated to some fantastic stuff from this fall.
Well, we won't now because we said it out loud.
Well, one of the things that this may tempt fate too, because it's more about what we mention, not what our listeners mention, but it could be also that we say it on the show. Quote, and so, with a macabre urge to begin with Once Upon a Time, I leaned back against the wall and with Ian's head still in my lap, began the story of Rose Hall and its mistress, the witch Galis Duncan, etc. It was Reverend Archibald Campbell who had actually killed Mrs. Alcott, we are reminded. We're also reminded how tenuous and precious their life is there on the ridge. Jamie had taken a gun with him, but left his pistols loaded as well as the powder horn at the ready. And there was young Ian's musket. As Claire puts a cooling cloth on his head for his fever, he tells her that Galus Duncan had given him amethysts to drink for headache, ground up in vinegar, and also pearls and sweet wine for bedding.
Mm-mm.
Blue Apron is offering our listeners $30 off your first delivery. When it comes to dinner, let Blue Apron take care of the planning and shopping while you do the cooking and the eating.
You'll enjoy delicious meals like popcorn chicken with sweet chili cabbage slaw and cumin spiced wonton noodles with vegetables and peanuts on the table in 30 minutes or less. With incredible ingredients and chef-designed recipes, Blue Apron lets you see what the power of food can do.
Blue Apron delivers fresh, pre-portioned ingredients and step-by-step recipes right to your door that can be cooked in under 45 minutes. The menu changes every week based on what's in season and is designed by Blue Apron's in-house culinary team.
I am personally looking forward to my box being delivered this Friday. And in this box, the recipe I'm most looking forward to, I don't know if you've heard about these kind of meals, they're called sheet pan meals. You chop everything up and you put it on the one sheet pan and you put it in the oven. And you walk away. And then it all comes out of the oven at the same time and onto your plate. And this week, they're doing a sheet pan curry chicken and vegetables with creamy coconut rice. I'm fairly sure their rice will be done separately, not on the sheet pan. But it's still a sheet pan meal.
I look forward to this month's creamy pesto cavatelli. Don't forget, they have delicious vegetarian offerings as well.
So check out this week's menu and get your $30 off at blueapron.com/outlander.
Blue Apron, a better way to cook. As he's describing what Galus did to him, Lord John looks on, eyes wide. And then he says, "The diamond worked." Really kind of gnarly. That's what Galus had wanted with the young boys. Quote, "She said the stone grew in a lad's innards, the one she wanted," end quote. But it had to be a lad who hadn't lain with a girl. Otherwise, it wouldn't be right. He didn't know why she wanted the stone.
What kind of stone do you think
is in the innards?
Yes. Like a gallstone or like...
I have no clue. Do you know what this reminded me of?
No.
Completely different because there's no... Well, I guess with Galus, there's wannabe magic involved. But it reminded me of the witches who killed Diana's parents in A Discovery of Witches. When she was a child.
For their magic.
They're looking for... Yeah, the witches were looking for the magic inside of them, right? And it was... In their intentions, it was supposed to be...
Like that one Beezer stone or something like
yeah,
that?
Yeah. Yeah, there was something they were specifically looking for. Yeah. And then there's a thump at the door. Claire freaks out. Lord John grabs his pistol and says, "Who's there?" It was Rollo. And of course, they let him in. He jumps on top of young Ian. He threatens Lord John when the latter tells him to get down. He doesn't.
Of course not. He's a wolf. He do what he wants.
Of course not. Well, also, that's his person. Claire does some housekeeping and then sits to spin some wool. We learn.
Maybe then you're saying sit and spin.
Spin. No. Jamie had actually taught her how to click it, how to knit. But she's not in the mood for that right now. But she can wrap a wool into a yarn ball. A skein. He and young Ian... Jamie and Ian had taught Claire how to knit. Apparently, everyone learned in the Highlands, girls and boys. But as I said, she couldn't handle it tonight. She wanted something more mindless. So she winds balls of yarn. Joe B. writes, "Of course Jamie can knit and show off while doing so. Although considered a feminine art, although I know a few guys who are excellent knitters, knitting was commonly done by men. It's not a stretch from fishermen mending their nets, sailors managing ropes, to use that skill, due to lots of free time and necessity to knit. Many British sailors knitted their own stockings." Cindy R. writes, "Can we take a moment to chuckle that Jamie and Ian teach Claire to knit? Jamie's shock at Claire's lack of knowledge with this very basic task makes me chuckle." Quote, Do they not teach bairns anything in your time? Unquote. Does it make you curious if he has fears about a future where something so basic to him is no longer a common occurrence? If a woman of Claire's age can't knit, what other skills may be lost during the centuries?
Hey, she can sew. She sews people back together. She has skills they don't have. He needs to calm down. It's better that they have counterparts and gap fillers than that everyone can do all the same things.
Leanne F. writes, even now, Claire is not too adept at knitting. She contrasts her difficult efforts with that of the boys' efforts which she sees as a, quote, soothing, dreamy exercise, as comforting as the sound of crickets on the hearth. And perhaps best of all is Claire's reference to Jamie's knitting prowess. Quote, I laid aside a half-finished pair of stockings Jamie was making for himself. Striped, the show-off. Even with knitting, once again, Jamie proves himself the king of men.
Okay, Claire, so that statement of as comforting as crickets on the hearth. If I thought I heard a cricket on my hearth, that wouldn't be comforting. I would spend the whole night looking for the cricket.
Looking for
trying
it.
To get it out of my house. Also,
I just heard
as another side note, I find it incredibly relaxing to roll balls of yarn from skeins.
I could hear that. I mean, I couldn't hear it. I could see that.
Like, I find that way more relaxing than actually knitting. Knitting for me takes too much brain power. Crocheting, I can, like, plain crocheting, I can do that mindlessly and I can find that relaxing, but rolling balls of yarn is very soothing.
Claire experiences a very human feeling. Annoyance that Lord John was there, the burden of obligation his illness puts on her. But she knows that he had been through a lot with the loss of his wife and with sending Willie away with Jamie. Okay, 1 second, Sam.
Do you have something you'd like to say, Benny? Can you get it out and stop talking to me right now? Is that what you want to say to me? God, you're annoying. You're lucky you're cute. You're lucky you're cute, mister. Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Okay, here's what just happened. I'm trying to train my cats not to come up at all on the table. Mm-hmm. So to do that, I mean, you can yell at them, but they don't care. So to do that, I muted first, shook the penny can. As I reached it, Bria saw me and hopped down. But I still shook it. And as I shook it, the top popped off and three of the coins flew out and hit me in the face. It's not funny. It hurts. I really feel for Claire as she cares for Lord John and Ian. I'm a nurse, and being a caregiver is an exhausting profession. You give so much time and energy to ease others' pain and discomfort that many times you forget about your own needs. Her desire for simple comfort is well understood. Fresh air, a bath, clean clothes, and a comfortable bed. I understand her frustration and just wanting them to go away. That is a bone-weary exhaustion talking right there. I also understand the guilt she feels once she realizes her current discomforts are temporary and Lord John's, with the loss of his wife and his son, motherless, are permanent. Claire makes them both some tea. John had actually just been thinking of Isabel. And in their discussion, he admits that he doesn't know if he misses her. Lord John sees Claire with young Ian and says, quote, you are very good with him. Have you children of your own? How to answer? Get ready, Lord John. She replies, quote, we have a daughter, unquote. What? Is it yours and Jamie's? Lord John is shocked. He says he was surprised. And Diana writes that they're done with the tact. And Claire says, and a bit jealous, perhaps. So one more thing they had in common, loving Jamie, which we knew about, and caring and raising one of Jamie's sons. One of Jamie's children in his absence. What was his motive then for coming and bringing Willie? Quote, to allow Jamie to see the boy. Unquote. She replies, and the other obvious one, to allow you to see Jamie. So while she's chatting, she's rolling the yarn. Cindy R. writes, watching Claire caring for Ian, Lord John asks if she has had children. Clark tells him about Bree, and he's taken aback by this. His jealousy is plainly evident. He then parries with another thing we have in common, referring to the fact that each has parented a child of Jamie's and the jealousy each holds toward the other. Quote, "It's discomforting to find that feelings you thought safely hidden are in fact sitting out in the open for anyone to look at," unquote. I would say she probably feels a bit like a peeled onion at this point. Jealousy is such a bitter pill, makes one want to strike out at the source of the discomfort. I've heard people complain that Claire is too petty in her jealousy of John, but I don't feel the same. I think the fact that he shares a history with Jamie, most of which she has few details about, during a time when she was physically absent, is too much for her, and she's reacting accordingly. This is totes normal. She's not a saint. She doesn't need to ooze the milk of human kindness every second. John's comment that, quote, "Jamie has held my life in his hands for a good many years now," unquote, refers to the fact that whether Jamie realizes it or not, he holds John's heart in his hands. Leanne F. writes, "The discussion really gets going. However, when John is surprised and hurt to discover that Jamie has a daughter with Claire that Jamie never bothered to tell him about, John and Claire have reached the heart of the matter here. They both love the same man. They are rivals in that regard, but they also recognize the sterling attributes of one another. Yes, they are jealous, but they are both straightforward, honest, brave, and loyal individuals who want the best for Jamie. This opportunity to air their smoldering grievances with one another allows the two to understand one another better and to regard one another as worthy individuals who happen to love Jamie Fraser."
They just made that sexy. They're smoldering.
Oh, Lord.
Smoldering grievances.
No, that doesn't happen till. I'm just kidding.
You take that out.
I will. Welcome to our obsession, ZooLily.com, where you find something special every day. Everything at ZooLily is up to 70% off, and we got you a special discount on top of that.
ZooLily.com helps you discover unique items to dress up your home, your family, and yourself. What I loved about ZooLily is the range of products. I found clothes that I liked, and they come in a wide range of sizes. So it's not just, you know, your regular sample sizes, you know, 2 to 10 or whatever. They've got like plus sizes up the yin yang, and that they also have like home and beauty products. And like, I have a very specialized hair care regime that I'm doing for my curly hair, and they have my curly hair products. I saw them last week. I was so excited.
And I am thrilled with what I got. I got 2 maxi dresses, and this is going to sound random, but it reflects what Summer was talking about. There are huge variety of available things. I got the 2 maxi dresses at an incredible discount and a Tiffany blue silicone pastry brush, and I got double egg poacher. So you could poach 2 eggs at the same time. Also silicone, and it goes in a pan. So I am completely stoked.
New sale items are added daily starting at 6 a.m. Pacific. Expertly curated collections are typically on the site for 72 hours. So if you see something you like, you need to snag it right away.
ZooLily.com is totally different from other online retailers. That's why it could take longer to get your order. But that means you can get great deals on big brands you love and new ones you'll adore.
For a limited time, use gift code OUTLANDER to get 20% off your first order.
Visit ZooLily.com/OUTLANDER and use gift code OUTLANDER for our discount.
Go to ZooLily.com/OUTLANDER to get started and for full offer details.
What I was going to say is that I feel like this chapter is the beginning of the hatchet burying between these two. And I feel like until this moment, this exchange, Lord John has felt that he's had some sort of upper hand, that he could, I hesitate to say lord over her, but because he's Lord John. Anyway, you know, something to hold over her head. And now it's like, he's like, oh, we were even more even than I thought. We're at the same level, so.
Or maybe not even to lord it over her, but the fact that he knows that she has his heart and he loves her only and he's with her now that she's back, especially. He's with her for the rest of his life.
Yeah, but he had this special position, the position of I raise and I care for your son.
But what I'm saying is it's not a I don't think it's a matter of lording it over her. I think it's a, but along those lines, I think it's like in his mind or his, from his position, it's like, look, you may have his heart, you may have his body, you may have his, him in marriage, but you do not have his child. And then he finds out and he's like, well, there goes that. So I don't know if he thought he was better than her, not better than her, but you know, lording something over her. But I totally get what you're saying. But I think it was at least he thought he was special.
You may have done this, but I've done this.
And I'm special in this way that you'll never be.
Right. And it, he's like, come to find out.
Oopsie.
I'm not.
One of the times we hear Lord John's opinion of Claire. We'll hear this throughout the rest of the series. Quote, you are rather a remarkable woman. You are neither circumspect nor circuitous. In fact, I don't believe I have ever met anyone more devastatingly straightforward, male or female. Unquote. She says, it's not her fault. She was born that way. He replies, so was I. Did that give you pause in reply to her saying, I was born this way?
No.
I mean, I think Lady Gaga, in the way of Lady Gaga, in the way of that lyric, in the way of people talking about, you know, nature, nurture, that kind of thing, I'm born this way. That's what, that's like the secondary thing I got, not his surface level meaning. You didn't get anything more?
That didn't give me pause because it's an expected response. Why wouldn't he say that? He, you know, even a man of his time, he can't change who he is and who he's been, even if he's tried. And he's, you know, done his best to live in a way that is accepted by society, but he is who he is. And he's never really claimed otherwise outside of, you know, everywhere except for the people who he's trusted. So with Jamie and now with Claire. But I think Claire is only part of it because of Jamie. Otherwise, she wouldn't know about it either. Mm-hmm.
She preps an infusion for young Ian. Lord John said they'd heard of her, him and Willie, as they traveled from Wilmington. She was well known for her healing skills, and she was called a conjure woman. Lord John is concerned for Jamie and Willie's safety. He says he knows him. She says, do you indeed? Meaning Jamie, of course. Lord John trusts Jamie not to tell Willie the truth of his parentage. But what about Claire? Claire says it was generous, brave of him to let Jamie take Willie. Lord John replies, Jamie has held my life in his hands for a good many years now. I will trust him with Williams. Joe B. writes, John may fear for the safety of his son as there are inherent risks in being in the wilderness. He trusts Jamie, clearly. If he didn't, he wouldn't be on the ridge. There is no need for John to be there, and the distraction of new places and people may divert Willie for a time from his grief, and that's a good reason. But to allow Jamie such an opportunity to spend time with his son shows how much John is sure of Jamie's integrity. It's also a wonderful gift. Seeing Jamie, it is undoubtedly a gift that John can give himself, but it's got to be a double-edged sword. I can see that too.
He also didn't have much of a choice, you guys.
Once the illness came into it, no.
Yeah. And that's the only reason he went off with him.
Of course.
Like, he wouldn't have taken him away by himself if it weren't for the fact that everyone on the ridge was dying.
Willie didn't even want to go. Jamie had to punch him. He was being a little bastard.
Well, he is.
Yeah, that's true. Claire has finished the second ball of yarn. She starts a third. Lord John says that his feelings for Isabel were affection, familiarity, and loyalty. He says she was like a sister. Was she satisfied with that? Well, Isabel was satisfied. He believed. He was an adequate husband to her, though they had no children. It wasn't his dot, dot, dot. But Claire does not want to hear this. He replies tartly. Okay, actually, let's go back to that. Hold on. How do we know it wasn't his fault?
I don't know, but you know what no wife wants to hear? That they like them like a sister.
Well, if you're having sex, that's not really sisterly. But as far as their affection went, yeah.
Oh, she probably, I'm sure she knew.
John replies tartly, quote, "You asked me why I came. You questioned my motives. You accused me of jealousy. Perhaps you don't want to know, because if you did, you could not keep thinking of me as you choose to," unquote. Can I just say that I hope they don't get rid of the scene like they did with Lord John and Claire at the ball? This would be a huge loss.
Oh, see, you've done it again. They're going to cut it out and I won't have it again.
No. Okay, let's look at this rationally. They got around the ball scene.
Every time you say ball, I don't think fancy dress party. I'm
They got around the governor's ball scene with John and Claire. The easiest way to was, well, two things. Number one, he wasn't on the ship, although that's not related to anything. They had Jamie show her, tell her about Willie. That took the wind out of his sail. There's no need for that scene anymore. Okay. Love it or hate it, it took the place of that. It made it obsolete. Okay. Fair enough. Can they do that? Is there any way that you can imagine they can do it? Like maybe they don't have, maybe no one has measles. No, they have to because, oh no, they have to because of what's happening at the end of this chapter, right?
I think sickness. Well, if they're keeping all of the First Nation.
Niowene, yeah.
Then they have to keep the story because it's important.
It's an important part of the storyline for at least the first half of this book.
All the things add together to create the tapestry of this book. So it would be hard to cut that which we will speak of shortly out.
Well, because if Niowene doesn't die, they could keep her out of it. I mean, but I think it's important to show Claire. No. They need her because Niowene, I mean, they could choose someone else to deliver it. But what is the purpose of Niowene? Okay, it's a character you like. It's a character you feel bad that she was killed. All of that. But we knew her for like how many chapters? 10? And she doesn't show up that much. Biggest thing Niowene, that the device or the reason Diana uses Niowene is to that we get the prophecy that Claire will come into her full power when her hair is all gray. Correct?
That and also the prophetic statement of sickness, it's not your fault. Sickness comes from the gods. Is that what she said?
Yes, but that was related to her own death.
No, it was related to her own death, but it also makes her other statement of you will come into your power when your hair is all gray have more meaning because this lady clearly knew something. She had her finger on the pulse of the supernatural.
Got it. And it makes sense because her name is It May Be, It Will Happen.
Correct.
So that's, yeah. So with her name, her prophecy that came true, and then her, yeah. Okay, I can see that. But even if you take away the prophecy part, like the prophecy coming true, it could be like some medicine woman who goes on. I'm just saying, trying to think hard. I don't want them to leave it out. But if they did away with this entire, you know what? You want to know why they can't? Forget the
Stop
Native American.
Saying that. Every time you say why they can't, they'll find a way.
No, because Willie and Jamie go away. They have to have that.
Well, but if they get rid of the measles and they get rid of the Niowene and they get rid of the other things, they don't have to have any other things. And then they'll just cut to the chase.
What's left?
What's left?
What would happen if Lord John has to bring Willie? That has to be in there. If they don't have him get sick and the Native American in the corn crib and no one gets sick. Let's say they completely leave the measles out.
Then they could just continue on their way as they intended originally and as they do later. And then they have a nice little, hey, here's your son. All right, bye. I shot the snake and I'm covered in poop.
So anyway, if I hope that, even though I said it before, I think a chapter or two ago, I hope that this is kept. Another time that we see, I wouldn't say as equals, but they're kind of tandem parallel characters, as I said before, Claire and Lord John. And I hope that we don't yet again miss a wonderful opportunity to see these two together. When Lord John found out that Isabel was dead, he says he didn't care, meaning it wasn't meaningful to him. It didn't have like this flash of burning intense sadness or life-changing effect on him. He says he came to see, part of the reason, the main reason he came to the ridge was to see whether he could still feel, whether it's his own feelings that died or only Isabel. And by now, Claire sees that young Ian has the spots, and his fever had lessened a little bit. She says, "Well, now that you've come and seen him, do you still have feelings?" "I do, yes. God help me," he says. Joe B. writes, "John claims he felt nothing at hearing of Isabel's death, which sounds harsh, but I don't think it's true. If he truly had no feeling for her, why do this? Why question himself so much? Consider how he should feel. That he needs to know if he can still feel anything is some proof that he still can. The marriage of John and Isabel has so many layers and questions still. Claire asks if Isabel was satisfied with her life, and it's a very typically male response of John in saying, quote, she didn't say she wasn't, unquote. However, John clearly did have deep feelings for Isabel, stemming from the loyalty and love of long-term friendship and family connection, as well as the shared care for a child. It's not a bad foundation, and sexual orientation aside, it's more than many marriages started with, including Jamie and Claire. From what happened to Isabel in The Scottish Prisoner, I'm leaving out a spoiler here, her romantic life has been love and betrayal, her remembrances of the unhappy short marriage of her sister, and a desire to raise Willie properly, she finds in John stability, loyalty, and friendship. The idea of a marriage based on passionate love is perhaps not what Isabel ever expected to have, either ever or due to the hurt of her first love proving false. It seems that she never knew of John's other proclivities or knew and didn't mind, as the marriage was a mutual benefit. Either way, Isabel was a truly compassionate and loving mother, and John is grieving her. There is tension between Claire and John, and in many ways, this is a continuation of the tone of their conversation at the Governor's Ball back in Voyager. Antagonistically honest, John talks to Claire in a way he never can or will to Jamie. In the morning, she's awoken by Clarence the Mule. It was Pastor Gottfried, leader of the Lutheran Church in Salem. He arrived very fatigued and looked like he rode a long way with no rest. He asks if Jamie is there. He's trying to make himself understood because he speaks very little, if any, English. And Lord John very helpfully comes out and asks in German, "Was ist los? What's going on? What's the matter?" The pastor gives Claire a scandalized look with John coming out, a man she's not married to. And Lord John explains what's going on, and he listens to what the pastor has to say. He relays to Claire, "Do you know a family named the Mulos?" He says the child died, as did the mother, and it was the measles. The pastor thinks Jamie might be able to reason with Herr Mula. Claire says he can't be reasoned with save by force. Now here's what happened. Measles had been in Cross Creek and spread to the backcountry. The Mulos had been spared because of their remoteness. Only recently they had gotten it. The day before the measles appeared, quote, a small band of Indians had stopped at the Mula farm asking for food and drink, unquote. Mula had driven them off and they made, quote, mysterious signs toward his house as they left, unquote. When the measles appeared the next day, of course, they thought it was the hex. He painted anti-hexing symbols on the walls. When his daughter and granddaughter died, he went cray. He forced his sons and sons-in-law to go with him to find the indigenous, the people who had come. They'd returned with, quote, two long tails of dark hair, unquote, that were now hanging from the barn door. Above the word Rache, which means revenge. And Mula was on his way there. Mula had gone to see Claire. The pastor doesn't know why Mula is coming there. He set out after him, and he found him later on the way, insensible by the side of the road. The pastor continued on his horse, and he beat him there. He says maybe she should go, you know, be safe, leave. They communicate that Ian is sick. She cannot leave. The pastor has to leave so he doesn't get the measles. They say, if you've, you know, you haven't had it, this place is sick, these people are sick, you need to go. He blesses her and then takes off. Claire shudders to think of the carnage Mula had enacted and of the future carnage that the families of those slain would take in return. Back inside, young Ian is still feverish. She sits and cares for them both while waiting for Mula. Lord John asks about Mula. She tells him of the event at the mill, when Müller had thought one of the miller's daughters had shorted him. Jamie, I have to say real quick, it's kind of, I don't know if Diana knew this, but Müller in German means miller.
She had to know.
Mr. Miller thought one of the miller's daughters had shortchanged him. Okay, anyway, that just made me laugh.
Takes a miller to know.
Yeah. Jamie tried to intercede, and there was no talking sense into him or talking sense to him. He just kept going on, so he punches him. Müller was also almost 70 years old, and it had taken Jamie 3 blows to take him down. Jamie had then taken care of the problem by counting out his bags of flour to the other's approval. He even thanked him. She has a tear for Petronella and the baby. The baby she had helped deliver. Lord John says, quote, "I did sometimes wonder what he saw in you," unquote. And then, "When he began to speak of you, both of us thought you dead. And while you are undoubtedly a handsome woman, it was never of your looks that he spoke," unquote. So Lord John is telling her he sees what Jamie saw in Claire. He says, "You have his courage." And then later, John thanks her for his life. She says there's not much she can do but be there. He says, quote, "A little more than that. Will you have more ale?" And I was beginning to see quite clearly what Jamie saw in Lord Grey.
I think she should have stopped giving him ale.
Because he kept talking?
No, because then he kept using the chamber pot.
Oh, that's too funny.
I would have reduced his liquid intake.
Cindy R. writes, "I appreciate how Lord John takes charge of the situation with Pastor Godfrey the next morning. First, mainly because of the simple need for translation, interpretation actually, because John speaks German. Once the story is told that Müller has taken scalps and is on his way to the ridge to see Claire, he stands firm as protector. Both John and Claire admit to wishing Jamie were present upon hearing of Müller's imminent arrival, fearing that Müller has evil intentions toward Claire. Claire's desire for Jamie's presence is obvious. Protection and the knowledge of the two of them together can face anything. I don't think John's reason for wanting Jamie present is for his strength, power, or ability to reason with Müller. I think John is worried about being solely responsible for Jamie's heart, which is Claire. John knows that if something happens to Claire, Jamie will come undone. Loving Jamie as he does, he wants to spare him pain."
He has to also be a little bit off-kiltered about a 70-year-old who it took 3 tries to get him to punches. I'm like, yes, I don't think he's afraid that he can't handle himself, but handling a 70-year-old that it took 3 blows to knock sense into him by Jamie. And Jamie's a much larger person than Lord John is in the books.
Lord John is slight.
Yes. He's fine. Fine-boned.
Leanne F. writes, "As the chapter comes to an end with the incident with Gerhard Müller, we see the two working together to assess and defend against the impending threat." So they're waiting and waiting, and she's like, you know, I'm worried, I'm anxious, but there's stuff on the farm that I have to do. And it's milking time. So she gets up and opens the door and steps directly in front of Müller. He was much changed. He was absolutely out of it. No horse or mule could be seen. Had he walked? He calls her Frau Clara. I thought, oh, that's so sweet. There is this note of pleading in his voice. He is in mourning. His daughter, his child, as well as his granddaughter. He is in misery. She tries to comfort him. Lord John comes out with a pistol. Seeing that he's not really a threat, he puts the pistol back in his pocket. Claire hugs Müller, and he sees that Lord John has the measles and exclaims, like, oh, no. And she said, no, don't worry. I'm good. I don't have it. I'm not sick. And you know what him calling her Clara makes me think of?
No.
I'll give you one more chance. Clara, nothing. Sei bereit.
There's no Clara in that.
Yeah, it's the same musical, though. Another song ends with Clara. I can't know the words, but
I've legitimately only heard that one song from that musical.
No, that's not true. I've heard that one and Knoblauch.
Oh, that's true. That's even good.
That's Bitter. It. Those are the only two songs, the garlic song and that song.
Let's go. So I have to make you a copy of that. I'll make you a mixtape.
No, no, I'm good.
He pulls something out of his coat. He says he brought her something, a charm of a kind, to ward off curse and keep her safe. He thanks her for helping his family. Muta unfolded the cloth. Quote, I opened my mouth but made no sound. I must have made some involuntary movement, for the cloth slipped suddenly to the ground, spilling out the sheaf of white streaked hair to which a small silver ornament still clung. With it was the leather pouch, the woodpecker's feathers draggled with blood. Unquote. In her mind, all she hears are the words Naiwene had said the previous year. Quote, her name meant, it may be, it will happen. Now it had, and all that was left me for consolation was her words. She says, you must not be troubled. Sickness is sent from the gods. It won't be your fault. Unquote. Cindy R. writes, when Mula does come, he is overcome with drink, exhaustion, and grief. He is simply there to tell Claire of his loss, to thank Claire for what she did for Petronella and her safe delivery of her baby, and to give her a charm to ward off the illness. Upon reading this last bit, with the revelation of what the charm indeed was, I felt like I was watching an impending accident in slow motion. Have you ever had that happen? You know it's coming and you're powerless to stop it, but it unravels so slowly you think maybe the outcome isn't going to be as bad as you think it will be. And then it is.
No, but I've been driving in traffic and had somebody cut me off and been wishing for them to get into a car accident. Not a bad one, just like, you know, for them to, that sounds bad. But the whole point is I got cut off by this guy on the freeway really, really aggressively. And then he immediately plowed into the car in front of him. And there was so much joy inside my heart to have been able to witness that moment.
Is this today?
No, this was like a couple of years ago. But there was so much joy. There was on my side. No one was hurt. Like, it was just like they both were able to pull over and no one was hurt. It was just like, I'm like, your insurance just went up. But there was so much righteousness that I felt. And I felt
righteous anger.
No, because I wasn't angry at that point. It was joy. No. It was pure, unadulterated joy at seeing instant karma.
Huh.
So I don't think I've ever seen it slow down and then not happen or happen worse than I thought it was going to happen. I can't think of anything.
Cindy R. continues. The chapter title, Heated Discussions, referring to several things within the chapter. The heat of fever and how a person can divulge out loud thoughts they'd perhaps keep hidden when well. Young Ian and some of his experiences with Galus at Rose Hall, for example. The heat of jealousy and anger that occurs between Lord John and Claire as they grapple with how to find common ground. The literal heat of an environment permeated by illness and how that can feel smothering. The heat of frustration and anguish Claire feels at her powerlessness in preventing Petronella and the baby's deaths, and the loss of her friend Naiwene. There's a lot of ground covered between John and Claire in this chapter. Both are straightforward and speak their mind. It was necessary for them to talk about their animosity toward each other and admit their jealousies in order to move on from them. They both realize that the other holds an important part in Jamie's life and as such need to learn to get along for his sake, if not their own. Leanne F. writes, Heated Conversations provides Claire and Lord John a chance to make their thoughts known to one another without Jamie being around to inhibit them, since he and William are away. I was also happy to see that my year of studying Gaelic, as time allows, is paying off. I actually could translate the and pronounce young Ian's Oichiva this time through the chapter. Ha ha! The heated conversations they share and the experiences of the chapter allow Claire and Lord John to forge a new relationship with one another. They know one another much better through their sharing of heartfelt truths and have gained a richer appreciation for each other as individuals connected through their ties to Jamie. They can appreciate one another and even admire their strengths of one another. Of course, they have not solved the issue of both being in love with Jamie, but they have perhaps reached a rapprochement that will enable them to venture into the future with a softening of their view of each other. Joe B. writes, Jamie's absence gives Claire and John a chance to find a relationship of their own, and in her role as healer, she has a greater sense of confidence. Albeit exhausted and worried, Claire is always more comfortable while doing something. In sharing aspects of what happened in Jamaica, Claire, Lord John, and Ian find common ground. I wonder how much more we will ever hear about what happened to Ian while captured. Will it be like Jamie and Culloden? We don't know because they don't. And I hope Book Yi Tian Cho is happy somewhere. In the hearing of the account of the Mueller's revenge on the Tuscarora, the deaths of the Mueller family, especially of the still new granddaughter of Chapter 23, remind Claire of the reality of death and of the death from things that are preventable, even in the 1960s. Measles has truly long-lasting significant effects, not just affecting fertility. And in this shared experience of hearing and interpreting, Claire and Lord John begin their own history without the mediation of Jamie. Lord John refers to her courage, and like Blackjack Randall, likens her courage to Jamie's. It's a high compliment. And Claire can offer John compassion as she too understands the complexity of grief and love. The friendship developed with Nyoene, the understanding of many things passed on to Claire, mean that although the revenge of Hermula is horrendous and misguided, it too is from desperate grief. She can offer comfort even as she is distressed. Of course, not in any way Claire's fault. The fact is that Europeans brought many diseases for which indigenous populations have no immunity across the New Worlds. Nyoene's gift for seeing the future and saying that the tragedy that has occurred is not her fault, that in essence she cannot always stop fate, gives Claire comfort even in the midst of her grief.
I think it would go without saying that Claire has never been able to stop fate.
Yeah, that's true.
Like, as evidenced by the first three books, she's never been able to stop fate. I would venture to say that Brianna is much more effective at stopping fate. But we'll get to that later. All right. And we will continue with chapter 29, entitled Charnel Houses, I believe.
Merriam-Webster defines a charnel house as, or charnel, I should say, as a building or chamber in which bodies or bones are deposited, also charnel house. Jamie and Willie, they are approaching a village of indigenous people. He smells smoke. He has Willie take the horses and hide. He tells him exactly where to go, and he once again says goodbye to his son. It's not a normal village fire. Every longhouse in the village has been burned. He flashes back to the funeral pyres of Culloden. He vomits due to the stink. This reminds me of the slave burning grounds in Jamaica. Did you think of that too?
No, I didn't, but I can see the connection.
Because he barfed then too. He hears a dog bark and thinks, if there are survivors, the dogs will be with him. He recognized the dog as he approached as belonging to one of young Ian's friends, Onakara. Then Onakara came out. His face was painted with white. Now, Diana didn't mention it, and I am doing a reread of Moby. No, I'm not going to talk about a spoiler, but maybe it's later in this book too. But at some point, at least in Moby, it's discussed the different colors of paint on that they use have different meanings. White, if I'm not mistaken, is, I think white is mourning or sadness. That's what I remember. I could be wrong, but I just read that a few days or listened to that a few days ago. From Moby, but again, she hasn't told us here. She's just describing him. Jamie asks, who did this? Onakara didn't answer. He turned and walked into the forest with his dog, so Jamie follows him. A bit later, he comes upon the survivors in a temporary camp. It is very reminiscent of the aftermath of Culloden, or just the Highlands, period. Jamie goes to Nacognoeto and asks about Nyoene and Gabrielle. Sickness has happened. It was the measles. Nyoene had gone to look for treatment. Bet and Gabrielle had gone with her. None had come back. They, the Tuscarora, left the dead in the houses and set fire to them. Not invaders. They will go north to Oglanataka. Jamie leaves quickly to find Willie by nightfall. Erica B. writes, Jamie has a lot of faith in Willie to trust that he can find his way back and not get lost or scared. My younger son is about Willie's age here, and we don't let him go more than a block away. I think Willie is quite brave to not think twice about his task. And what a devastating scene with all the houses on fire and knowing there are bodies in them based on the smell in the air. Then to find out the village had a measles epidemic, my heart breaks for these people. I do hope they find healing soon, though.
And that was chapter 29. Join us next time when we will begin part 8 of our Drums of Autumn read-along. Part 8 is entitled Boku. And we are doing not one, not two, but 3 chapters next week, you guys, because they are...
Actually, 4.
Oh. Not 3, but 4 chapters next week, guys, because they're all that short.
They're crazy short. As always, join us to continue the conversation in our Facebook community. Find us at outlanderpod.com/group.
And if you're interested in joining us and becoming a contributor to our Drums of Autumn read-along, you can go to www.outlanderpod.com/DOA to find out how to get involved.
And if you love our show and are entertained by it, please consider visiting our Patreon page and consider supporting us. Every little bit helps cover costs, be it hosting, recording, equipment, etc. There are also a number of free ways to help support our show. The most important way you can do this is to help spread the word. Tell your friends and family about the Outlander podcast. Thank you, as always, so much for listening. We look forward to our next episode. Thank you to our generous partner, Zencastr, who offers high-fidelity podcasting. Check out Zencastr and use coupon code OUTLANDER20, OUTLANDER20, for 20% off 3 months or 20% off for a year. Connect with us. Visit our website at outlanderpod.com. Find us on Facebook, facebook.com/outlanderpod. We'd love for you to join our Facebook community at outlanderpod.com/group. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at outlanderpod.